employees leave their employers for a variety of reasons. Most people understand the departure when it's a significant step up or promotion. But what about those situations when it's really just a lateral hire? Is it okay for one company to poach or steal away employees from another for similar positions? Tim Gardner is a professor at Vanderbilt University's Owen Graduate School of Management who's written on the ethics of lateral hiring. Tim, first of all, how would you define lateral hiring?
I would define lateral hiring as the intentional actions of one company to identify, contact, solicit, and hire an individual or a group of individuals from another company. And specifically, what I'm talking about is hiring individuals that already have jobs and that are not necessarily looking for outside opportunities, making them aware of those opportunities, offering them a position, and ultimately hiring, like I say, an individual or a group of individuals.
Do you feel that it's okay for a company to go after an employee at a competing firm?
I really think it should be encouraged in many ways. We know competition in the product market is good for consumers, good for companies, and I think the same thing applies in the labor market. Firms that have agreements not to compete with one another or employees that are protected from competition, I think, suffer from lower wages and lower opportunities. So I think it's good for the economy and good broadly for society as well.
But perhaps looking at the other side of it, if Company A spends a lot of time training someone and just getting them up to speed and paying all their benefits and, you know, sitting there while they're learning how to do something, and then the next thing they know, they say, oh, I'm going to go across the street and work for this company because they're giving me, you know, a slightly higher paycheck.
Right. It is. It's the downside of poaching is that loss of training investment, loss of goodwill. My answer to that is that it comes down to competition, that ultimately what the other company is doing is offering a different, potentially better opportunity. And if that employee's skills are sufficiently valuable for the original employer, then they need to offer better working conditions, better promotion opportunities, better pay, better benefits to make sure that the employee is fairly compensated for the skills and time and effort that they put into their company.
Some companies do have non-compete clauses, correct? I'm thinking
Absolutely.
About television, radio, the people that are
many
the major
industries,
talent.
Many industries.
Yeah. And what do you think about those?
I'm in favor of them. It's a legal, effective way to reduce turnover. There's a couple different ways of looking at those. Number one, those agreements are written to control people's mobility within certain geography over a period of time, 6 months to, you know, 2 years, and a set of industries or companies in which they can work. And if those parameters or if those definitions are too broad, then they won't be enforced in the court. And so sometimes you'll see these non-compete agreements that say you can't work anywhere in North America for the next 5 years. And that's unenforceable. It's not going to control the employee's movement. But when they're written of reasonable length of time, a reasonable number of industries, a reasonable geography, I think they make a lot of sense. There's two ways, it's two important things to talk about with non-compete agreements, is when the employee is asked to sign it. If they're asked to sign it prior to their employment, they are, in exchange for signing and limiting their future opportunities, they're getting a job. So in a sense, the employer is saying, I'll give you a job, and in return, you limit your mobility after you leave. Where it gets a little dicier is when you ask already employed workers to sign them. And if you say, sign this or you're fired, it's not a guarantee, but they're less likely to be enforced through the courts because there's a certain amount of coercion and that the employee wouldn't have willingly given up that mobility after employment. And so what many companies do is they'll offer a small bonus or a signing incentive, $2,000, $10,000, depending on the level of the person, to say in exchange for limiting your mobility, we're willing to give you this amount of money.
You do think it's okay for people to have non-compete clauses, but also it's okay when there aren't non-compete clauses then for companies to come in and, quote, poach people.
I agree. And the reason I say that is because with a non-compete agreement, the person is given the opportunity to sign it or not sign it. If they're already employed and they choose not to sign it, they miss out on that $5,000, $10,000 bonus or whatever, or a promotion that may go along with it. Or if they choose not to sign it at the beginning of employment, they're personally weighing the costs and benefits of whether they want to take that job with that limitation. And so although that does restrict employee movement, it's the employee's choice to engage in that defined contract between the company to limit that mobility. When companies get together and say, we're going to limit how we hire each other's employees, the employee, his or her mobility is limited, and he or she did not have any say or any choice in that particular agreement.
Have you ever found any examples of that happening where companies colluded together that they wouldn't hire each other's employees?
I have a personal experience myself. When I lived in Utah from 2002 to 2007, I was involved in founding a charter school. Charter schools are public schools funded by public funds. And as a founding board member, one of my responsibilities was to find the 30 elementary school teachers to fill the school and teach the students. Through using public sources, we were able to identify email addresses of the teachers in the elementary schools in the surrounding districts. And at that time, the school district had even put ads in the newspaper advertising their teachers of the year for all the different schools. And so we thought, those are the teachers that we want working at our school. And so we made a number of efforts to identify them, contact them, offer them employment. And I received an email from the superintendent of the school district saying, quote, that we had acted unethically and that there had been longstanding agreements among the school districts not to hire and not to offer teachers alternative employment, and had asked us to stop doing this or that they would pursue legal options to stop us. And really, as I argue in the paper, rather than us acting unethically by offering these teachers different opportunities with potentially better working conditions, more involved parents, I would argue that that district and the districts that had worked together to limit those opportunities had acted unethically.
And how about on the higher education level with colleges and universities?
It's very common, and I think it's less likely that you have those agreements. I know in the world of faculty hiring, the one thing you have to remember with professors, their productivity is very public. We know how many articles they publish. We know how many times those articles are being cited, patents, all of that type of information. And so it's easy to figure out who's good and who's not good. And so it's very common practice for universities to go and hire scholars and professors at other universities. And I think it's more of an accepted practice. Same within law, consulting, accounting, a number of fields. The more public the employee's performance is, the more common poaching is, and really just the more accepted it is by all the parties.
How has the economy affected poaching? Has there been less of it with the downturn?
You know, we only have indirect measures of that. We have very good measures from a number of different studies of how common poaching is. What's the percentage of people who change from one job to another without having engaged in job search? But we don't have any very good direct measures of how that changes due to the economy. But we know the executive recruiting industry, sometimes called the headhunting industry, we know that their revenues are very closely correlated with economic activity. So in times like this, in a recession, an ongoing recession, the revenues for the executive recruiting, the headhunting firms, are way down. And so I would make a pretty good guess that company activity in recruiting and hiring is down. And so poaching activity is probably down at this time as well.
Do you think it will come back up as the economy rebounds?
Absolutely. If you think about when companies are downsizing and having to cut back due to economic setbacks, they're generally going to let go of their least productive workers. It's not a random process as to who stays and who goes. And so companies know that. And so in economic times start to improve, unfortunately for the currently employed, I think there's going to be a lot of lateral hiring or poaching of those currently employed, because the companies have already signaled that these are the best workers, and those people will be poached away People are going to look for, or at certain level of positions, companies are going to look for the currently employed rather than trying to hire the unemployed.
They will have figured that these people were able to stick it out and make it through the recession, and they're continuing to be on the job, so they have more training and experience.
Right. That the company that employs them knows best who's most and least productive. And so if they maintained their job over the recession, they're more likely to be productive than employees who were let go during the recession. Now, certainly that doesn't apply to any single individual and a decision made by a company, but in the aggregate, if you had to be a betting person, companies believe that it's better to hire someone currently employed rather than someone who is laid off or unemployed.
So would you say that education, the K-12 education, is one area where poaching is not appreciated as much, or people tend to look down more when it happens?
You know, I have that one experience. I don't understand the thinking process behind it. I know, you know, with the crisis in education we have in urban schools and other schools, that good teachers are hard to find. I don't know if what I saw was just something that happened in this set of districts in Utah, or if it's broad-based. I'm guessing it's broad-based, but I don't have good data to support that.
Are there times when companies colluding together to prevent lateral hiring would end up being illegal?
Possibly. There's a very interesting story that's unfolding in the press right now. Back in June of 2009, the U.S. Department of Justice opened an investigation on Google, Yahoo, Apple, Genentech, and a number of other companies that had agreements not to laterally hire each other's employees. There have been a number of legal cases over the years where companies have agreed not to hire each other's employees at all. That's a simple case of collusion. The principals and the companies involved in that process get slapped with fines and a number of other punitive activities. What's interesting about this is that these companies merely agreed not to laterally hire, not to specifically target specific employees and offer them positions. If those employees would have applied on their own, there was no agreement not to hire them. They had merely agreed not to target each other's employees. We don't know how this is going to come out. This obviously hasn't been considered by a judge or a jury, but we do know the Department of Justice is looking into it, and I think it'll be interesting how this comes out.
When you say they made this agreement, was it an agreement like over drinks, or was it actually something they wrote down?
The best information we have of what's been reported in the press, and they have listed it as formalized agreements between these firms. Now, whether this was in writing, it's probably unlikely, but there must be a trail of some sort of formal or informal communication that they would have a specific list of companies that had made these agreements not to hire. Some of these agreements may have been more formalized in joint venture or alliance agreements, but along the same line, it'll be interesting how this turns out, because they, as I said, they're not refusing to hire each other's employees, which is clearly patently problematic. They're just agreeing not to target each other's employees, and we think that this paper provides some insight into how that might be resolved.
And how did you conduct most of your research?
The study that we published was written for an academic ethics journal. And so what we did was we reviewed a number of different employment contracts, employment laws, going as far back as the 1300s, all the way through some recent legal activity in 2009. And instead of collecting and analyzing data and drawing conclusions from data analysis, what we did was we looked at how ethics scholars had analyzed other economic activity, competition for customers, competition for market share, competition for resources, and applied those same ethical frameworks to how we can and should think about competition in the labor market. And so we feel that competition for workers is very similar to other types of business competition. And so using those ethical frameworks, we concluded that, as we write in the paper, that poaching is not something that should be limited the same way other types of business competition. We generally agree that other types of business competition should not be limited.
Well, you take this research to any other level or pursue any other aspect?
I will. I've done a previous study on lateral hiring, looking at how firms respond when they've been the victim of poaching or talent raids. what determines whether they're going to retaliate against the firms that hired their employees. I'm currently working on a project looking at the very detailed level of what happens in a lateral hiring. We have a lot of large-scale survey data that says a percentage of people who do this or percentage of people who do that, and we're involved in identifying about 50 lateral hiring incidents, and we're interviewing the company where the person was originally employed, the person themselves that was hired away, and the company that hired them away to try to get an understanding of the type of information they used to identify them, to pull them away. Essentially, why were they so interested in hiring a currently employed individual rather than just going to the broader labor market and posting for a job or monster.com? So I do have a longer research stream related to this.
Is it difficult to get companies to participate in this type of study?
For large-scale surveys, yes. For the study that I did on poaching and response to poaching, I had to use trained surveyors to get companies to be willing to talk more openly about this. The current study that I talk about is early research, and we're using contacts and networks of our own people to build the model. Once we have an idea from those qualitative or informal information, that'll help us craft a survey where we can ask people questions without them feeling as though we're going into controversial areas or controversial territory.
Have you ever been involved in a lateral hiring issue yourself? I know you mentioned the charter school.
With the charter school, and before I came to Vanderbilt University, at my previous university, I was on a faculty hiring committee, and we did a fair amount of work of trying to identify individuals that had the specific skills and background. Even if they were not looking, we would send them information, contact them, take them out to dinner at academic conferences, the things that were, again, that fit into this model of identifying, contact, soliciting them and trying to pull them away from their current employer.
So can people read your paper or find out more information somewhere?
Yeah, the best way to find this paper and other papers that I've written would be to go to www.owen.vanderbilt.edu, and under faculty profiles, you'll be able to find a number of papers that I've written and a direct link to this paper.
Tim Gardner is an associate professor at Vanderbilt University's Owen Graduate School of Management. For Interview, I'm Avery Dear Owens.